When he finally got arrested in 1979, Victor Gidden was found in a room with a smoldering hibachi and three bodies in various stages of consumption. One, a young woman, Marjorie Sample, who was a neighbor on Victor's street. She was still alive when the police broke through the door. There were teeth marks in her flesh and long bloody slices taken off like strips of bacon. His condiments were garlic powder and rosemary flakes. He grilled while drinking a beer and paging through the latest issue of People magazine with a bare-chested Telly Savalas on the cover. The dinner guests were tied to chairs with socks stuffed in their mouths. As they jerked and writhed in silence, the knife cutting into them, Victor was reminded of an ad for the recent film Alien. In space, no one can hear you scream. It was his favorite movie that year, barely beating out his old beloved Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was the godlike nature of the sleek xenomorph that won the day. Victor's face had no angles, pale and rubbery with jiggling jowls and a perpetually panicked look in his eyes. He always wore a smile, not a smart smile, nor a cynical one, forget friendly, a smile devoid of joy. Those who saw it wanted desperately to believe it was a good smile and went out of their way to delude themselves that there was simple kindness there. His receding dark hair was pitch black and, what was left of it, long and stringy. He carried a comb in his shirt pocket protector along with a red pen he used for writing in his journals. He stood 5'8" and slouch-shouldered. He wore the waist of his seersucker pants pulled high up his pudgy body, fastening the belt only inches below his chest. His favorite shirt was a mint green Banlon number with three buttons at the top and a collar. He was a quiet person in public places, padding cautiously by in his black sneakers, head down, carrying his Evel Knievel lunchbox containing two joints, a lighter, and a payday candy bar. Victor's murderous cuisine most likely would have been discovered sooner if he'd had to work. His father, Victor Sr., now deceased, along with his wife Joan, had left their only son a small fortune. The old man had all the contracts across the country in nearly every hotel for the printing of those paper banners that went around toilet seats and announced, "Sanitized for your protection." His money would have run out soon enough if he'd not been arrested for the triple homicide. His neighbor, Marjorie Sample, succumbed to her wounds, a lack of throat tissue. Those toilet banners, as they were called in the industry, didn't make it out of the 80s. There are almost no hotels or motels left that use them. So his future business interests were less than auspicious, but at the time, still steady and fruitful enough for him to survive in his parents' old house on Argyle Lake in Babylon, New York, and have enough money to sustain himself and his desires. A lot of people who encountered Victor thought he was just a low-wattage individual, but there was a shrewd brain working behind his pudgy exterior. Later, when he was serving multiple life sentences in Attica, he was given a battery of psychological tests. And although all the results were above average, he tested off the chart for organization and strategy. He was like a vicious fox hiding in the body of the Pillsbury Doughboy. In his own testimony, he acknowledged, "Upon the instant I was aware of wanting to eat human flesh, I began planning how I could make it happen." He admitted to being stuck in his scheming until the gas crisis hit in the latter months of 73. That afforded him an opportunity, seeing that some people were desperate to the point of delusion. Victor confessed that, although his entire life to that point had surreptitiously been building toward it, he'd inevitably come to cannibalism one day at the Babylon 5 and 10. That morning, he'd smoked one of his three weekly angel dust-dipped joints. He'd been a pot smoker since his early teens when he'd discovered his mother's stash. Afterward, he'd contacted a local dealer and purchased it regularly through the years. It took the edge off his loneliness. He had no friends and few acquaintances. In 72, his dealer, one of the only people he conversed with on a regular basis, suggested he purchase a few dippers